Good morning, Pensacola. It is Tuesday, the day after the eclipse. It's April 9th. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day. I've got started the day with some sad news. Ronnie Joyce passed away yesterday. He was most known for the last three decades for putting on gospel concerts. And he had a regular TV show, gospel music on WHBR. I think I've got that right. He was also a special guest of this show. He came on several times. One time he came on and presented me a COA promotional poster they did when they used to do these huge caricature maps that advertisers bought to have their business on the map. And he brought that to me, and it really was a really cool view of Pensacola in the 80s. He started as a sports editor at the Pensacola News Journal. We're talking about Ronnie Joyce. He was there for 20 years until the Ball family sold it to Gannett. And he said with Gannett, he became a number, not a person, and he moved on. Then he went and worked with Fred Levin to help start Blab TV. And he had about an 8% ownership to run the station for him, and eventually bought him out, and he said he did really well. But he always did sports. And he talked about it. You know, he actually did, you know, he did. He interviewed Steve Spurrier, Bear Bryant, Emmitt Smith, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicholson, Lee Trevino. When the Pensacola Open or whatever rendition it was, the Emerald Coast Classic, he always was there on the scene interviewing them. He also did sports here on this station with Don Priest and Luke McCoy and the crew that they had here when this was a heavy news and sports station. And they did, the local high school game of the week. He interviewed some of the same people here. A lot of boxers, Sugar Ray Leonard, Ken Norton. Because of his relation with Fred Levin, he was able to get just about anybody. And then what he's most known is for the gospel concerts he put on. And how he would use that to most of them were free in his later years. He just did it out of a passion for gospel music and for this community. And he would do donations to local charities. So we lost Ronnie Joyce yesterday. I'm sure there'll be more. Well, maybe the news journal may not remember him because they don't have anybody from last week, much less 20 years ago. But he was a regular on the show, and he was very, very kind to me. I think he was here seeing him when you were in the south of France, so you didn't ever get a chance to really talk to him.
Well, I saw the poster.
Yeah, the poster is cool.
Because I remember those posters that's back in the early 90s, you know, that they did those posters.
Right, yeah, it was, you know, that was a big advertising thing. That and hurricane maps.
They're sort of caricature, yeah. Oh, hurricane maps are huge marketing.
I'll pull up that interview that I had with Ronnie. I'm going to go ahead and write something up because we actually did get him talking about the old times and who he worked with, and it really gave you a good picture of this station and realizing its role in this community. So keep Ronnie Joyce in your prayers and his family.
Well, did you go out and look at the eclipse yesterday?
No, I didn't go see the eclipse. I did see the eclipse, but the no, I didn't. How did the cats take it?
The living fixed assets did fine.
Yeah, it just stayed cloudy the rest of the day. It seemed like the world with the whole nation got mooned yesterday. All right, so what we've got is the city sent out a notice. Online bill payment has been restored. So, Cena, you got to go online and pay your bills. They've worked out. They think they've got it safe. There'll be no late fees charged for anybody until May 1st. So you got a little bit of time to pay it off. But after that, the late fees will come on. We'll have the mayor on about 7:50 to talk about what's going on with the city. But I know this was an important step that they've been working to get back to because a lot of people were concerned with Pensacola Energy and the sanitation department as far as how to pay their bills. And a lot of people don't have checks anymore. So to go and pay a bill with a check, a lot of people don't have those. That's kind of an antiquated thing.
Yeah, I had it on automatic pay, so I'm still not sure. Did it actually? I have to check.
Okay. Well, now hopefully you can. I did on the blog, opened up this morning, just That interesting conversation you just did with the county clerk. County attorney, Allison Rogers. What I wrote about yesterday, about this being really a Florida retirement system, that they're the ones, or if there's an injured party, they're the injured party. And the Florida retirement system is working with the county. The clerk has been, her attorney has been tied into it, figuring out how to move not only the commissioners, but everybody in that plan. It looks, based on the analysis of what the Florida retirement system looking at that ruling too, is the entire plan was unlawful. So everyone who went into it thinking that it was something they could do, we need to figure out how to move them into the Florida retirement system. So that is what everyone's working on. No one's writing a check to the county clerk. Again, let's move on to what this really was about. It was about a plan everybody thought was lawful and isn't. So the whole plan has to be scrapped. They need to come up with something new that they want to offer older employees that have gone through the drop system and then come back to work. That's essentially what this is about. And somehow over the years, over 24 years, it got modified the way it is. There are plans throughout the state that are similar to what we have in Escambia County. The Florida retirement should start looking at all those plans, because a lot of counties have an issue. Or, well, we don't know how many, but we know several do. We're not the only county with this type of plan. So that is what's being worked out. Some people are calling for the clerk, because the Florida law is that if a county clerk writes a check for something that's illegal, she or he should personally reimburse the county for it. I don't think anybody's asking for that. There have been some little, buzz out there about how costly this lawsuit was for the county or for the county clerk. But if you go and read the decision, you'll see the judge outlines how much time. The reason it took over 2.5 years was the county clerk made several motions that drug this thing out. Once they got through all the motions that she made, which took almost 16 months to resolve, when the judge said, we're going to go to jury, we're going to have a non-jury trial, only took 6 months to hear the final arguments, and less than a month for him to make a decision. This could have been over at the latest December of 2022, not April 24. So, we'll work to it. My goal is to get past all of the showmanship, and let's just get down to what the judge said, what it means for county employees and elected officials, and let's move everybody into the Florida retirement system the smoothest way we can do it. So we'll see. I don't know. People have already picked sides in this issue, but that's what the ruling says.
Well, did you watch the full game yesterday?
I made it to halftime.
Me too. I gave up at halftime. It's like, I think I know where this is going. I think I know it's where it's headed. The Huskies made it look easy. They beat their last six opponents by an average of 23.3 points and won 12 straight tournament games in double digits.
Yeah, it's amazing. Going back to last year, they had a really interesting strategy. We'll have Stephanie Yelton on, the women's coach at University of West Florida. She'll talk about the women's championship. She was there for their Final Four. But it was interesting strategies. Go ahead and let the big man, Zach Edey, go ahead and let him score his points and shut down everybody else. So he was the top scorer in the game, but they didn't get the threes that they were able to get in other games. So Connecticut just kept pulling away and pulling away. And just such a talented team.
The TV ratings are in for the South Carolina-Iowa final in the women's. A massive 18.7 million people watched that game.
Wow. It was exciting. It was great to see that happen. It's kind of like football season now. You hate to see college basketball over.
So
we'll get there. But we'll have Steph Yelton on to talk about it. It's hockey playoff season. We're going to have Greg Harris, the owner, on when we come back from this commercial break, talking about what the three-game best of three that's going to be played. They're playing Peoria Riverman, and the first game is going to be here, and then we have to travel. We'll have to win. Hopefully, we'll win here, and then all we have to do is win one out of two up there. on our way to they broke a franchise record this year in attendance. So we'll talk about that. The CRA in the Warrington Redevelopment District, they're having a planning meeting today at 5:30 at Lexington Terrace. Commissioner Mike Kohler, they really want to have public input on where they go with Warrington, what needs to happen. We know they've added disc golf over to the parks over at Lexington Terrace. That was a big announcement last week. But this meeting is a series of three. It starts at 5:30 today. You can find out more about it at myascambia.com. That is going on. City Council met yesterday, and that was agenda review and CRA. They'll have their regular meeting on Thursday. I'll reach out to Jennifer Brayer and see if we can get her on tomorrow to talk about what's there. We'll have the mayor on shortly about that. See, what else? We're going to have Mike DeBusky on to talk about tech at 7:35, so we'll have that. And then, I think we got a pretty good lineup. Let's go ahead and break.
Station.
We are Pensacola's first radio station. Started in City Hall, was owned by the city. In 1926, we are your radio station, have been that way, and we will always be that. We will do our best to tell you what's going on in town, just as all of those ahead of us did. We're Real News. I'm Rick Alston with Cena Madison.
It was always my thing to stay awake long enough to see one shiny moment at the end of the broadcast. Did not make it last night, but that's what YouTube is for, I guess.
Well, you know, it's just the game started at 8:20.
It's so late. We walked around work going, hey, they don't want us to watch this game, apparently. Because you're on the East Coast, they start at 9 o'clock at night.
Our Pensacola Ice Flyers have made the playoffs. The first game is going to be here. And we've got the owner, Greg Harris, on. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Y'all had a fantastic season. Every promotion seemed to really click. Your attendance was just huge this year.
Yeah, it was, you know, the community really responded. We've definitely kept our staple theme nights that fans love, but we're able to find some other ones too. You know, I think the big one was the addition of attaining that Blue Angels license agreement, and that really helped kick the season off in a fantastic way. I think it was the third or fourth game that we did that fourth game. I think we did that one, and we did a couple of jersey giveaway nights that people really responded to, and people were lining up and camping out at, you know, 4 or 5 hours ahead of game time. So it was great. You know, it was a great mix. It was a great schedule, and it was the average, what was it, a little over 5,300 a game. It was incredible.
It really is. You know, for our listeners, this is owner Greg Harris of the Pensacola Ice Flyers. I know it's become such a family event that my grandsons, who are 7 and 2.5, love going to hockey games. Yeah,
awesome.
It's just so much fun. I mean, adults have a great time. You've got a lot of longtime fans. But it's something that the atmosphere that y'all create in the ice box is, you know, just really electric.
Yeah, it's definitely something we look at. You know, we break down every single element, and you know, when we're developing our production script, and that's a lot of people don't like see that it's a full-on production,
right?
You know, especially with those, you know, beautiful video boards and everything. You know, the amount of people we have there, it's a full-on, you know, production. We have a script down to the second, down to the stoppage during the periods, and we really look at the flow of the game and how we can impact. You know, we look at an impact moment every certain, every period or something that gets the people hyped up, and so it's really an art to it, but we've definitely have found a great rhythm that fans have been responding. And like you said, it doesn't matter the age. You know, that's the big part. We, you know, since COVID, our demographic has definitely, you know, lowered as well, and we've been able to maintain that, but we've definitely been able to amplify on all the things. From doesn't matter if you're 2 years old or 90, you're going to have a great time.
Really? Now we've got the first playoff game is here. It's Wednesday tomorrow at 7:05. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, tickets are on sale. That's it's against Peoria, which is funny because people wouldn't think a team 14 hours away is a rivalry, and it's a massive rivalry, and especially historically too. So it's the game is going to be an entertaining game. It's playoff hockey, which is unlike anything you've seen. It's going to be the game, but yeah, we're pumped up. We're going to be doing a whiteout. So anyone that just wear something white, doesn't matter. We'll white out the hangar, and we're doing a puck giveaway. Everyone, the first 1,500 fans are going to get a puck with courtesy of Florida Blue there. So it'll be a fun thing just to get the playoff season going here. I heard right before about talking about the championship last night. So we're going to carry this on and build it up and get that hangar rocking for sure.
Well, this is important. It's the best of three. So winning here makes it a whole lot easier going to Peoria and knowing you only have to walk away with one win. So this is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a little bit different with our, if we would have played Birmingham, we would have started in Birmingham. But because of the distance, there are teams in our league, we really work on it doesn't make sense to go up and back,
right.
So we, but yeah, to have game one here on home ice, that's big. And, we've done well, our fans have definitely, helped us, get those victories and get the energy going for our players. So to get that first win. Yeah. Because anything goes, especially at a best of three. Because they're basically three best of sevens or three game sevens.
Right.
That's
right.
If you lose one, you're in trouble.
Right. Without a doubt. Our team, we're tied for the most championships in the league. We've got our reputation, the reputation that you've built as the owner, Greg, is just we're well respected in the hockey community.
Yeah. No. I appreciate it. And then it's great people, and it's not just getting into good players, but it's the good people too that represent everything that we're about as a team and as a community and all the things that we want to accomplish. But to be able to get that and reach that and kind of make it a complete, well-rounded organization and for our fans to be able to do everything that we're doing in the community and attendance-wise and the fun, but then to reward them with the championship, that's always icing on the cake. So that's what we're going for, because we want to be the first one to five championships. I'm a very competitive person, so I don't want Knoxville to win that. And Knoxville's not in the playoffs this year, so we have an upper hand on them.
Oh, great! Well, Greg, good luck, and thank you for coming on this morning. All right, take care.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye. One of the good guys. He really is. He's former Pensacola Sports Association. I think it was a year or so ago. Made him Sportsman of the Year, and they've got a foundation. They really are involved in the community. We're lucky to have them and the Blue Wahoos having these two really quality organizations that give back to the community. Now, Cena, the News Journal caught on to your story. Everyone's talking about the traffic to go to the Blue Angel practices. They're going to be practicing today and tomorrow, weather permitting. Hopefully the weather will hold. The weather could be a little bit dicey tomorrow. They're waiting to see about it. But today it looks like it's going to happen. And what's your recommendation?
Well, I used to make jokes about sticking roundabouts out there because I thought it would make it worse, but it might make it better.
Yeah, it was really backed up. You need to be heading. If you're thinking about going, the gates open at 9. The viewing area opens at 9:30, but you could go to the museum and park there.
But it's hard to get, this traffic's going to be backed up as soon as the gates open. I mean, it's you get there right when they open and you can probably do it, but yeah.
But it's good. Mm-hmm. It is worthwhile. It really, truly is. And it's one of those things, and I've seen it very early on. I remember when you were working with Ashton Hayward in his administration, you were advising, we need to do everything we can to be sure we keep the Blue Angels, because they're not really based out of here. They're here, but their headquarters is elsewhere, and they could go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, fortunately, this community is,
and we are set up to have them.
Right, we are. So that is something that
we need to make it work.
All the mayors since then have worked on it and stayed focused on it. And we've got a great Blue Angel organization here that supports them and their wives and make sure that they're welcomed in the community. So
and the thing I noticed when I was out there going on for practice, there's so many people from out of town that really don't know their way around. Most everybody was somebody visiting, because there's cool. other places you can watch them, you know, right. if you know. Navy Point is mm-hmm. a great place to sit. That's what I used to do. I used to walk down my street
right.
and sit
right.
out. I'd take a lawn chair out there and sit out and watch.
Well, I didn't think about Navy Point.
Navy
Park,
Point, the park is right a beautiful, there. Cool, nice place to go take a walk and watch them.
Right. Or even it's a little bit further away, but Maritime Park.
Mm-hmm.
If you get on the other side of the stadium, and you can watch it from there, too. So there are a lot of good – you can see them a lot. The best is definitely on the base, but there are other ways to do it. So, and it's – they do all their tricks. So it's a full show that they practice with. So it is amazing.
And it's always been cool. I've always said it's fun because all my last two offices both had windows facing the Blue Angels practice. The only problem is when you're working – you hear them after you see them.
Right.
So if you're not, like, watching full-time, you're going to miss them. But.
Right. And then, of course, over the weekend, we saw them. They flew over Blue Waffle Stadium. Mm-hmm. That was really cool because it just sort of came out of nowhere, came over us, and that was nice to also see. So we've got, let's see, I just recap real quick. The city has got online bill paying back up. You're not going to be hit with any late fees, but you need to pay up between now and May 1st. We'll have the mayor on a little bit later to talk about it. Ronnie Joyce, a longtime sportscaster, sports editor for the News Journal for over 20 years, then went on to help start Blab and really created a sports element to Blab TV back when Blab was in the bottom 12, 13 channels of the TV. And then worked here, too, and did Friday night high school football games. He was a big part of that here and interviewed a lot of people. Then most recently, the last three decades, has really been focused on gospel music and put on some unbelievable gospel concerts and regular TV show, WHBR. So he passed away yesterday. Let's go ahead and break. We'll be right back.
1370 WCOA and 104.9 FM is your station for news and talk.
Ain't got no home. I know phase is wrong. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home. I got a voice. I love to sing.
We're that wonderful City of Advantages, WCOA. I'm Rick Alton with Cena Madison.
We lost Clarence Frogman Henry. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation is actually the one that released the news that he had died at 87. Interesting to me that this is on the soundtrack to The Lost Boys. Probably got a little mailbox money out of that
right,
one.
Right, a little bit. Somebody who'd like to get some mailbox money is Elon Musk. Tesla is getting, and he probably owns a mailbox. It is, Tesla's under more and more competition. They've got a new product they were going to introduce this summer, and we got Mike DeBusky on. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Fine. Tell me about the robo-taxi.
Yeah, so this is a new plan from Elon Musk at Tesla. He says that we're going to get a look at a completely self-driving taxi on August 8th this summer. And this is not a new idea for Tesla. They've had this kicking around for a few years now. But whatever it ends up being, it's going to be a big deal because if you talk to analysts in the field, Tesla's valuation, a $542 billion market capitalization as of this morning, is tied to this idea that the company is going to move away from being a manufacturing company, from a car company, into being more of a service, something more akin to Uber, where instead of, you know, you driving back and forth to work in a car that you paid for, you're going to be driven to work in a self-driving robo-taxi, and then that taxi is going to go off and collect more fares. It's a very ambitious goal, and Tesla's current self-driving technology does not seem to support the fact that we are going to get to that goal at any time soon, because they faced a number of lawsuits related to people who've been injured or even killed using their current self-driving technology, and the California Attorney General is investigating them over that as well.
You know, it is the idea of getting a car in and not having a driver or not being in charge. It's hard enough driving with my children when they were trying to teach them how to drive and trying to find a brake to hit when they were going too fast. to be in a car that you have no control over anything, no human does, is frightening to me.
Right. Well, it's an incredibly complicated thing that we do as humans. If you take a step back and think about it, driving, which is something that we do every day, but it's really difficult for a computer to learn that. And you've seen Tesla, you know, really struggle with its systems, which in no small part they call autopilot and quote unquote full self-driving, which maybe writes a check that the technology itself cannot cash. But other companies have struggled with this as well. Cruise, which is an offshoot of General Motors, recently suspended operations after several high-profile crashes in San Francisco. And Waymo, which is Google's self-driving car wing, similarly faces challenges over this as well. And you see that kind of reflected in the fact that not all cities, not all states allow this. It's sort of a patchwork of regulations. Some allow the cars to not have drivers behind the wheel and just operate autonomously. Others require a test driver to be just sort of seated there to take over in case anything goes wrong. It's really sort of a wild west in the self-driving car world at the moment, and something that Tesla is planning to shake up this summer.
And I know when I was a little kid, when I was first starting to read, they like to do a lot of, you know, reading materials in the school system about what things were going to be like when we had self-driving vehicles, and they were going to fly, and they were going to be people pods and all this stuff. And it's kind of like, let's make it happen already.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, though. I mean, as we've seen, again, like, you know, the human response to certain actions that happen in traffic is itself very human. And a computer's not great at responding to things like, you know, construction or people behaving irrationally on the road, which, if you've ever driven on a road anywhere, happens a lot. So it's a difficult hill for them to climb, it seems.
Now, I'm hearing Spotify is using AI to do playlists. I want you to explain this to me, because I just thought it was possessed. So I want to see how this works. Yeah.
Right. So this is a new feature that they are rolling out in beta, only in the test phase right now, where essentially you go to a special page within Spotify and type in the vibe of music that you're looking for. Some examples that Spotify lays out here are tracks for horse riding into the sunset, or another one, an indie folk playlist to give my brain a big warm hug. That's what was in Spotify's press release. I didn't come up with that. I want to be clear. The idea is
sounds like you.
The AI will create a list of 30 songs that sort of suit that vibe. They're testing it in Australia and the UK right now, but they are planning to roll it out to more markets in the future.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. We can have a lot of fun on this radio show with that once it gets here.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we were hearing, too, that they're going to be raising prices, and they're starting that in the UK first to see how it goes, and that they may be raising their prices over here eventually.
Yeah, and Spotify's not cheap, it's worth mentioning, either. But they've been exploring a number of different ways to sort of, make themselves more appealing as they face competition from, Google in the form of YouTube Music and from Apple in the form of Apple Music. Their forays into podcasting has been pretty successful for them, signing big names, Alex Cooper and Joe Rogan to be exclusive to Spotify for a period of time. They've also explored getting into audiobooks and certain, video applications as well. It's interesting to sort of, examine Spotify's strategy as it goes forward, because it's kind of a hodgepodge of different things. Mm-hmm. They're kind of throwing a lot at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Well, then we'll have to go ahead and ask the question next week for bumper music for Mike Dubusky. What's the music to prep the audience for Mike Dubusky?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to think about it. Let me marinate on that.
Yeah, let's do it. It could be scary. All right. Have a good week, Mike. Thank you for coming
up. You too, guys. Take care.
Take care. All right, Cena, just for you, I was Googling while we were watching this. The Jetsons was set in 2062, so we're 40 years away, 39 years away. So your cats will understand what that's like. I don't think I'll be here in 40 years.
You mean my living fixed assets.
Yeah. Right, that'll be it. But so that's, all the Jetsons we're doing, that's just 40 years away, so...
Yeah, I was wondering how they handled the eclipse, and I came home and they were fine. They were like, we're hungry.
Yeah, they'd already gone through the wine and a carton of cigarettes, and they were.
we all went outside and it was pretty cloudy, but it made it a little bit easier. We had enough glasses that.
Celebrate.
It was funny, and all the social media, everybody in town is looking up. Yeah.
Right. Everybody has. Yeah.
It was much bigger. If you watch the video of the path of totality, it was a lot more impressive than it was in Pensacola.
Right. But it was, again, one of these once-in-a-lifetime events.
Well, 40 years. We're going to have 40 years. And that's what we were sort of having.
When the Jetsons come. When the Jetsons come.
Yeah, we sort of having that conversation. You think you're going to be around? Maybe we better go downstairs. Just to be sure. We actually had those conversations before we went downstairs.
All right, we've got this weekend, the Pensacola Beach. We're going to have Pensacola Beach Firefighters Challenge. They're going to have area teams with the different firefighter groups. They'll have an opening ceremony, individual competition, even corporate competitions. That's going to be Saturday. And then on also Saturday, we're doing the Luna Swim schedule is going to be done. That is an open water swim. More than 100 swimmers have done it in the past. You can, it is nonstop. It's Speedo. It's part of the Speedo Salt Series, which, you know, I'm a very big participant in. And so that's this weekend. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get Ray Palmer on to talk a little bit about it because Pensacola Sports is the one who's pushing it. So we'll do that. You want more things before we take a break? We got. All right, let's go ahead and break. We'll be right back. Good morning. We're Real News with Rick Outson. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day as you have for now almost 2.5 years. I've got Cena Madison here.
Good morning.
And I'm here, Rick Outson. We also have Mayor D.C. Reeves. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Fine. Well, good news about online bill paying coming back online yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to have that back up and running. And we also extended, now that we know we have it, we've extended any, you know, a grace period of getting your bill paid or, you know, freezing any or eliminating any late fees through the rest of this month. You know, obviously the normal, in a standard situation, it might be 3 days or something like that. But, you know, for the sake, you know, we've been down a few weeks. We certainly need to give a few weeks to the citizens to make sure everything's all good. So that'll, we'll kick back into normal operations as far as billing goes on May 1st.
Well, it takes a while to let everybody know that it's back up, too.
You
know,
correct.
You know, just to be fair to everyone. So I think that component is definitely a big part of it. What else is going on? How did the council meeting go yesterday?
Yeah, agenda conference was good. CRA meeting, you know, I think one thing we're really excited about is we got approved at CRA, and, of course, it'll take final approval at council. But it's the same folks, it was unanimously approved that it'll be the first of its kind for the city of Pensacola. We've taken a handful of lots, and we partnered with the Home Builders Association, who are going to come in and get materials donated and labor donated. And we took a few of our lots that we're putting in. It'll be the first community land trust project in the history of the city. So you're familiar with some of our conversations previously about a land trust with. But ultimately, for your listener, to summarize it simply, you put it this way, that a community land trust allows affordable homes to stay affordable forever versus having a runway or amount of time where then they can be sold at market rate and they go back into the market rate pool. So as I mentioned to them, you know, I don't want it to be lost on this CRA board or this council that is what a big step that is, that ultimately – these homes and eventually, hopefully, more projects like this will stay in that pool forever so we don't find ourselves in situations like we are now where we just are in a dire need for housing of all types.
So this trust is the city's land trust, separate from what Habitat is doing?
No.
This is part of the Habitat?
It's important to delineate this because it proves it, in fact, with this vote, is – The folks who Sam Young and the team at Habitat were the advocates of the land trust, but the land trust is an independent nonprofit. So,
okay.
For example, the homes that are being that were just approved are being built by the Home Builders Association, and it's our property. The land trust has to manage that, and they have to monitor that, right? Qualified buyers. Okay, what 5 years from now, when one of those qualified buyers wants to sell? Who's in charge of handling all that? You know, that there's a lot of work and monitoring that goes into a land trust, not as much as it would be with rentals, and that's what makes rentals very difficult. But this is a perfect example of that independence is that it is led by the Habitat folks. They've built 1,600 homes in the community. Certainly they know what they're doing. I'm sure they're going to be building many homes that would be in a land trust. However, this project is independent of Habitat actually doing the work. This is going to be the city and the Home Builders Association taking that on with the backing and monitoring of the established community land trust.
So essentially, the land is being put into the trust. Is that those lots? I'm trying to understand technically what we're with.
Sure. Yeah. So what happens? These are city owned lots or CRA owned lots.
Right.
They go into the land trust. We have an additional layer of security that we're going to put in, and I say we as the city of Pensacola, which is the property will now be leased, you know, in possession of the land trust. However, we with any deal we would do with any land trust, we're going to have an extra layer again of security to say if for whatever reason the land trust wanted to start selling property, you know, 30 years from now, whatever the case may be, they wanted to start selling property, we would have the ability to get our property. You know, we'll put some filter there to make sure that for whatever reason that the city still would have the ability to retain its original property if it's not being used for the intent that it's being used for now. Okay. So, yes, in essence, we donate this property, put it into a land trust. And as the Home Builders Association president said during the meeting on Monday, that these projects aren't possible with the cost of land. So, I mean, that is the city's subsidy to help create affordable housing. But this allows us to do it at scale and allows us to do it simultaneously with all of the other projects. We talked about Motor Lodge yesterday. We talked about Main Street yesterday. So, you know, that's what we like about it is having these partners really allows it. You know, when I started, we were starting to go down the road of just building one house at a time on our own. And that's great, and that's well intended, but that's not going to get us anywhere. You know, we've got to be doing these things at scale, as you've heard me say many times.
But talking about housing, it appears later this month on the 23rd, Opening Doors has sent out an invitation for an orientation of the new continuum of care. Have you been briefed on any of this, or what they're looking, how they plan on structuring it?
I haven't personally. That's not to say that Meredith in housing or Councilwoman Patton hasn't been involved in that. I don't want to, you know, I'd have to confirm that. But no, I'm not aware of that. Okay. Personally. But taking, as you've described it, any step in that direction, I think is a good thing. And what I've really been focused on in terms of the for homeless reduction right now is getting John DeCarmine in, who has successfully run a low barrier shelter in Gainesville. He'll be here May 13th. I believe he'll be doing a Civicon as well, talking about, you know, what's true and not true about a low barrier shelter and how it helps communities. And we're asking him, you know, someone I was asked on a radio show last week, hey, we hear a lot of experts or consultants coming in about this topic. You know, what's different about this one? And what I said is, this is not, hey, come give us your opinions on homelessness as a whole in our community. We have done a lot of that. This is hyper, hyper focused on if the city's going to be spending $1+ million or more in operations to try to stand up a low barrier shelter. We want to make sure we understand what we're getting into and make sure that what we can't have happen is the city open a low barrier shelter and have to close it in 6 months. That can't happen.
Right.
So I'm doing everything I can, all the homework I can, to make sure that if we're going to do this, I'd rather not do it than start it and stop it. That doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody in the shelter. Certainly doesn't help the operator. So that's what we're doing. We're doing our research and making sure that if we're going to do this, that we're doing it right.
Right. Right. I know that's a challenge. What kind of – have you closed the process for the old Pensacola Sports building on Main Street?
Yeah. So a couple of updates. So we got so we had discussion items on to brief the CRA board on both of those. So we got four letters of interest for Main Street. And so those I know those have been public. The next step there, and that's that I really like the new letters of interest model that we've done. We did it for Motor Lodge and we did it for Main Street. And here's an example. What it allowed was, so we had four people put in for it. Now, some had more detail. Some in essence just really basically gave credentials. Like here's our company. Here's the projects we have. That's okay at this point. Because the next phase, we don't have to eliminate, we don't have to go whittle it down to three or to two or to one. We can say, okay, all four of you seem okay so far, in 60 days or 45 days or 30 days, we need this fleshed out. We need to show that you've got the financial wherewithal to do this. Whatever those next steps are that the CRA staff take, we're able to take those without having to eliminate someone in essence too early, or in the old format, if we were just doing an RFP or an RFQ, we may not get all the interest because of how much time it takes to put something together. So it allows us to test the market. That's what I like about it. We get to see, okay, lots of the experts have looked at this. What do they think will work here? And so we got some residential mixed use interest. We got some hotel interest, as well as people potentially partnering with the owners of the Harborview building next door and their parking. Which I think is smart and resourceful. So we talked about that. No action on that, but talked about that. Then we took some action on Pensacola Motor Lodge. We had an add-on to go ahead and start the formal disposition process, which happens with any city property. It'll have to go up for 30 days for anyone to offer on it, ask about it. You know, that's just a standard protocol.
Right.
So, yeah, we went ahead and did that at the Motor Lodge, and there were two letters of interest at the Motor Lodge, one being clearly – more thought through than the other. So what do we do? We'll start pursuing that first one. So and getting more information from them. So anyway, both of those came up yesterday, and we're excited about the process.
Oh. Well, it is a brand new way of looking at it, and does give the city and the city council and the CRA a little bit more control over how it will develop, because as you and I both know, so often if you put an RFP out, then that's all you're going to get, and you may not have it right. It may not be the best use of that property.
And a quick, the LOI, here's a perfect example. We were hoping to repurpose at Motor Lodge, but we don't know if that pencils or not. Well, all the interest we got was all really focused on either partial or full demo. Mm-hmm. So if we would have put out, hey, you have to keep these 28 rooms exactly as they are, we may have spent 6 months getting nothing.
Right.
You know, because the market doesn't bear it. So that's a perfect example of what this process allows.
Right, and we've seen that happen before back in the old the Hawkshaw project or over in Aragon, what they wanted to look. You know, that the county or the city batted that around since 2007 and got – you never really got what they originally said they wanted, and now it's something totally different. So I think that's perfect. Mayor, I'll see you in a couple hours. Thank you for coming on.
All right, thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
Take care. We'll give you the national news. We'll be right back. Good morning. We're Real News with Rick Outson. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day, as you have for now almost 2.5 years. I've got Cena Madison here.
Good morning.
And I'm here, Rick Outson. We also have Mayor D.C. Reeves. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Fine. Well, good news about online bill paying coming back online yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to have that back up and running. And we also extended, now that we know we have it, we've extended any, you know, a grace period of getting your bill paid or, you know, freezing any or eliminating any late fees through the rest of this month. You know, obviously the normal, in a standard situation, it might be 3 days or something like that. But, you know, for the sake, you know, we've been down a few weeks. We certainly need to give a few weeks to the citizens to make sure everything's all good. So we'll kick back into normal operations as far as billing goes on May 1st.
Well, it takes a while to let everybody know that it's back up, too. You know,
correct.
Just to be fair to everyone. So I think that component is definitely a big part of it. What else is going on? How did the council meeting go yesterday?
Yeah, agenda conference was good. CRA meeting, you know, I think one thing we're really excited about is we got approved at CRA, and, of course, it'll take final approval at council. But it's the same folks, it was unanimously approved that it'll be the first of its kind for the city of Pensacola. We've taken a handful of lots, and we partnered with the Home Builders Association, who are going to come in and get materials donated and labor donated. And we took a few of our lots that we're putting in. It'll be the first community land trust project in the history of the city. So you're familiar with some of our conversations previously about a land trust with. But ultimately, for your listener, to summarize it simply, you put it this way, that a community land trust allows affordable homes to stay affordable forever versus having a runway or amount of time where then they can be sold at market rate and they go back into the market rate pool. So as I mentioned to them, you know, I don't want it to be lost on this CRA board or this council
what a big step that is, that ultimately these homes and eventually, hopefully, more projects like this will stay in that pool forever, so we don't find ourselves in situations like we are now, where we just are at a dire need for housing of all types.
So this trust is the city's land trust, separate from what Habitat is doing?
No.
This is part of the Habitat?
It's important to delineate this, because it proves that, in fact, with this vote, is the folks who Sam Young and the team at Habitat were the advocates of the land trust, but the land trust is an independent nonprofit. So,
okay.
For example, the homes that are being that were just approved are being built by the Home Builders Association, and it's our property. The land trust has to manage that, and they have to monitor that, right? Qualified buyers, okay, what 5 years from now, when one of those qualified buyers wants to sell, who's in charge of handling all that? You know, that there's a lot of work and monitoring that goes into a land trust, not as much as it would be with rentals, and that's what makes rentals very difficult. But this is a perfect example of that independence, is that it is led by the Habitat folks. They've built 1,600 homes in the community. Certainly they know what they're doing. I'm sure they're going to be building many homes that would be in a land trust. However, this project is independent of Habitat actually doing the work. This is going to be the city and the Home Builders Association taking that on with the backing and monitoring of the established community land trust.
So essentially the land is being put into the trust. Is that those lots? I'm trying to understand technically what we're with.
Sure. Yeah. So what happens? These are city owned lots or CRA owned lots.
Right.
They go into the land trust. We have an additional layer of security that we're going to put in. And I say we as the city of Pensacola, which is the property will now be leased, you know, in possession of the land trust. However, we with any deal we would do with any land trust, we're going to have an extra layer again of security to say, if for whatever reason the land trust wanted to start selling property, you know, 30 years from now, whatever the case may be, they wanted to start selling property, we would have the ability to get our property. You know, we'll put some filter there to make sure that for whatever reason that the city still would have the ability to retain its original property if it's not being used for the intent that it's being used for now. So yes, in essence, we donate this property, put it into a land trust, and as the Home Builders Association president said during the meeting on Monday, that these projects aren't possible with the cost of land. So, I mean, that is the city's subsidy to help create affordable housing. But this allows us to do it at scale and allows us to do it simultaneously with all of the other projects. We talked about Motor Lodge yesterday. We talked about Main Street yesterday. So, you know, that's what we like about it, is having these partners really allows it. You know, when I started, we were starting to go down the road of just building one house at a time on our own. And that's great, and that's well-intended, but that's not going to get us anywhere. You know, we've got to be doing these things at scale, as you've heard me say many times.
But talking about housing, it appears later this month on the 23rd, Opening Doors has sent out an invitation for an orientation of the new continuum of care. Have you been briefed on any of this, or what they're looking, how they plan on structuring it?
I haven't personally. That's not to say that Meredith in housing or Councilwoman Patton hasn't been involved in that. I don't want to, you know, I'd have to confirm that. But no, I'm not aware of that. Okay. Personally. But taking, as you've described it, any step in that direction, I think is a good thing. And what I've really been focused on in terms of the for homeless reduction right now is getting John DeCarmine in, who has successfully run a low barrier shelter in Gainesville. He'll be here May 13th. I believe he'll be doing a CivicCon as well, talking about, you know, what's true and not true about a low barrier shelter and how it helps communities. And we're asking him, you know, someone I was asked on a radio show last week, hey, we hear a lot of experts or consultants coming in about this topic. You know, what's different about this one? And what I said is, this is not, hey, come give us your opinions on homelessness as a whole in our community. We have done a lot of that. This is hyper, hyper focused on if the city's going to be spending $1+ million or more in operations to try to stand up a low barrier shelter. We want to make sure we understand what we're getting into and make sure that What we can't have happen is the city open a low barrier shelter and have to close it in 6 months. That can't happen.
Right.
So I'm doing everything I can, all the homework I can, to make sure that if we're going to do this, I'd rather not do it than start it and stop it. That doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody in the shelter. Certainly doesn't help the operator. So that's what we're doing. We're doing our research and making sure that if we're going to do this, that we're doing it right.
Right. Right. I know that's a challenge. What kind of have you closed the process for the old Pensacola Sports building on Main Street?
Yeah. So a couple of updates. So we had discussion items on to brief the CRA board on both of those. So we got four letters of interest for Main Street, and so those I know those have been public. The next step there, and that's that I really like the new letters of interest model that we've done. We did it for Boater Lodge and we did it for Main Street. And here's an example. What it allowed was, so we had four people put in for it. Now some had more detail, some in essence just really basically gave credentials, like here's our company, here's the projects we have. That's okay at this point. Because the next phase, we don't have to eliminate, we don't have to go whittle it down to three or to two or to one. We can say, okay, all four of you seem okay so far. And all right, in 60 days or 45 days or 30 days, we need this fleshed out. We need to show that you've got the financial wherewithal to do this. Whatever those next steps are that the CRA staff take, we're able to take those without having to eliminate someone in essence too early, or in the old format, if we were just doing RFP or an RFQ, we may not get all the interest because of how much time it takes to put something together. So it allows us to test the market. That's what I like about it. We get to see, okay, lots of the experts have looked at this. What do they think will work here? And so we got some residential mixed use interest. We got some hotel interest, as well as people potentially partnering with the owners of the Harborview building next door and their parking, which I think is smart and resourceful. So we talked about that. No action on that, but talked about that. Then we took some action on Pensacola Motor Lodge. We had an add-on to go ahead and start the formal disposition process, which happens with any city property. It'll have to go up for 30 days for anyone to offer on it, ask about it. You know, that's just a standard protocol.
Right.
So, yeah, we went ahead and did that at the Motor Lodge. And there were two letters of interest at the Motor Lodge, one being clearly more thought through than the other. So what do we do? We'll start pursuing that first one. So and getting more information from them. So anyway, both of those came up yesterday, and we're excited about the process.
Oh. Well, it is a brand new way of looking at it, and does give the city and the city council and the CRA a little bit more control over how it will develop, because – As you and I both know, so often if you put an RFP out, then that's all you're going to get, and you may
that's
not have
right.
it right. It may not be the best use of that property.
And a quick, the LOI, here's a perfect example. We were hoping to repurpose at Motor Lodge, but we don't know if that pencils or not. Well, all the interest we got was all really focused on either partial or full demo. Mm-hmm. So if we would have put out, hey, you have to keep these 28 rooms exactly as they are, we may have spent 6 months getting nothing.
Right.
You know, because the market doesn't bear it. So that's a perfect example of what this process allows.
Right. And we've seen that happen before back in the old the Hawkshaw project or over in Aragon, what they
right.
wanted to look. You know, that the county or the city batted that around since 2007 and got – you never really got what they originally said they wanted. And now
right.
it's something totally different. So I think that's perfect. Mayor, I'll see you in a couple hours. Thank you for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
Take care. We'll give you the national news. We'll be right back. Good morning. I'm Rick Alton with Cena Madison on that wonderful City of Advantages, WCOA. Real news with Rick Alton. Oh, you love playing this. NCAA women's basketball, the most viewed televised game ever in women's basketball. The highest ranked basketball game in men or women, college or pro, since 2019. We had someone there, our roving correspondent, UWF women's basketball coach, Stephanie Yelton. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning.
Yeah, your boys got their hands. I mean, they must have been starry-eyed the whole time there.
It was an amazing weekend. We happened upon a pregame restaurant that happened to be right where the South Carolina Gamecock women's team was walking out to their bus. So, you know, Toby, my youngest, who's 11, ran out and got high fives from every Gamecock player. He missed Coach Dawn Staley's hand by just an inch. You know, it was an exciting, very exciting weekend in Cleveland.
You know, and the games were exciting. I mean, South Carolina was strong. I mean, unbelievably strong. But it was fun basketball to watch. And from you as a coach, it had to be fun to watch.
Oh, four very talented teams that play very different styles of basketball. You know, I thought the first night the matchup with UConn and Iowa with Paige Beckers, you know, and Caitlin Clark.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was the primetime event on Friday night to watch those two legendary women's basketball players go against each other. And, you know, then, you know, the earlier game was South Carolina versus NC State. Of course, South Carolina with their inside arsenal, NC State with their tremendous guard play. It was, you know, a different kind of game, the first, you know, of that series. But it was amazing on Friday night to watch those two basketball games. And just the electricity, the, you know, amount of people roaming around in the city. Now, Cleveland was packed. Cleveland had the Women's Final Four going on. It was in the eclipse zone, so many people had flown in for the weekend to see the eclipse on Monday. So Cleveland was definitely buzzing over the weekend.
You know, the Iowa-Connecticut game was I hated to see it end on a foul. Yeah, that was – what what were your thoughts on that?
You know, I go both ways because if, you know, if I'm Iowa, I want you to call that foul. It was a moving screen, you know, it was. Now, you know, if I'm UConn, I'm thinking, gosh, that player just got a little overzealous and, you know, got caught in the moment. But we know, like, we run that same action here at West Florida. And the action, the pistol action, that version of the pistol action with the rescreen gets called for illegal screens a lot of times,
right,
because you're asking a post player to turn a maneuver and reposition. And so risky call to know, you know, knowing that potentially could get an offensive foul call. But I think it was an amazing call because if that play worked, Paige Becker's coming off that wide open for a free shot.
Right, right. It was just the last minutes of that game were just so much fun. And you just saw every timeout, every inbound play, jump balls, all of that happened in that last minute. It was so exciting.
I said the only thing that we didn't get was five more minutes of that game. If we'd have gotten
right,
five more minutes of that game, everybody in the arena would have been, you know, ecstatic.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, Dawn Staley, talk a little bit about her. I mean, she was an amazing player and is obviously a great recruiter, but also a good role model.
Yeah. You know, Dawn Staley played at the University of Virginia, which is in the ACC. I played against Dawn my freshman year when she was a senior, and Virginia went to the Final Four her senior year. And so I've been on the court with Dawn Staley. I've watched her as a player. I've watched her through the coaching ranks. You know, the storied basketball player, coach, and tremendous person. But she has done amazing things. We talk about Caitlin Clark as a player doing great things for the sport of women's basketball. I think Dawn is up there with her contributions, not only as a collegiate player and as an Olympian, but now as a head coach and pushing, you know, South Carolina to a level of women's basketball that they have never seen in their school history. And she continues to carry the torch for many former players and coaches that you know, are getting into positions where they want to push their teams to an elite level. And, man, she's one to follow for sure.
Well, and she just was such a class act in her post-game comments, how she complimented the opponents, and just her overall attitude was just so showed good sportsmanship, but also was just a great example for a lot of us.
Well, and I think we saw that earlier in the season, right? I mean, the big talk when South Carolina played LSU was the little pushing scuffle, you know, that happened in their game. And, you know, Coach Dawn Staley's response to that was an apology. You know, hey, women's basketball supporters and fans, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, that happened. We let our emotions get the best of us, and that's not what we teach, and that's not how we want to perform on the court. And we apologize for those actions. I thought that statement was huge, and going into knowing that her team could potentially be in Cleveland for the Final Four and having other big moments, I thought that was key to how her team really excelled and stepped up and played great in big moments.
Well, I just know your boys, they went to bed saying their mom has the greatest job ever.
Well, I told them, we walked down, we had seats on the fifth row.
Oh.
And these were the best seats that I've ever had at a women's Final Four, except the one seat that I was, when I was sitting on the bench as a player, right?
Right, right.
And so, that's the best seat in the house. But when we walked down to sit in our seats, my boys looked at me and said, wow, Mom, how'd you get these tickets? And I said, well, this is what happens when you serve your basketball community. You know, I spent this season working on our National Basketball Committee in Division II and being on the board of directors with our Women's Basketball Coaches Association and serving on their executive committee. And I'm trying to teach my boys that when we serve in our professions and we serve our communities, that good things come out of that, right? Not only our service and what we bring to the table, but you get rewarded in other ways. And so for them to sit in those seats because Mom worked a little harder the past few years, I think that was, you know, again, a big life lesson for our family.
Oh, well, it's a good teaching lesson for all of us. Steph, thank you for coming on, and thank you for being letting us be a part of your basketball season. We'll do this again.
Well, let's do it again next year, Rick.
We will. All right. Take care.
All right. Okay.
Bye-bye. So cool. You know, it's great to go to the playoffs. To be in a Final Four is amazing. And it gets to be really intimate. When you're on that fifth row, you see everything. So it is fun to be there. Axios looked at how hard it is, how few players are at the top of their profession in basketball, both college and professional basketball. Only two of the top 50 current NBA players won a championship in college. Only six of them made it to the Final Four. That's how difficult college translating to pro.
Yeah, it never translates quite right.
Right, right. These players, this may be some of their last game, but you know, so it's or they'll never quite be at that pinnacle again. But it's the freshness of college ball, even with all the NIL stuff and everything else. Just their heart and soul is out there, and these kids, it's somebody gets in foul trouble or something happens, it all boils down to a few things, and they put their heart and souls in it. So it is definitely fun to watch. Okay, I tell you what, we'll go ahead and break. We'll come back. We're Real News with Rick Outson.
The only news talk station in Pensacola that shares the real stories behind the headlines. Every morning, Real News with Rick Outson. Weekday mornings at 7 a.m. on Pensacola's News Talk 1370, WCOA.
News with Rick Outson, and I've got with me Cena Madison.
Those Chechnyans are really blue meanies. Okay, this is last week. The Russian Republic banned music that is too fast or too slow, decreeing that all music should fit into a tempo ranging from 80 to 116 beats per minute. Now, Russian media is reporting this, and they did that because that would be slow enough that most Western pop and dance music would be outlawed. So they're trying to get rid of Western music that way. But Morning Brew sort of figured this one out. For reference, that means that Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy is going to be too slow. And Lady Gaga's Bad Romance is going to be too fast because that's 119 beats per minute. But Radiohead's Creep is just perfect, and they can play that in Chechnya.
The song I would always request in yeah. Global Grill, the acoustic version.
Or mandolin. Yeah.
University of West Florida, next week is their Founders Week, starting on Monday, going through the 18th. They're going to kick it off with painting UWF blue and green on April 15th. They're encouraging everybody to wear blue and green throughout the day and use the hashtag UWF Founders Week on social media. They're also going to do their Argos Day of Service with service projects in Pensacola and Fort Walton Beach next week. They have their annual Day of Giving, which is an online campaign, and they get alums to compete against each era of alums to compete against each other. They're also going to have a pantry food drive, and the Office of Undergraduates Research is going to do a scholar symposium also. So there's a lot going on next week. You can go to uwf.edu/Founders Week. I'll get this on the blog a little bit later.
CNN's got a story today about what movie theaters are doing to draw in customers. We're still trying to figure that out, that algorithm coming out of the pandemic, and they've been doing things like those weird popcorn buckets like they did for Dune. And Eras, I know the Eras one sold out really well, but the other thing they're going to be doing coming up is a lot of re-releases. They're going to do 1999's The Mummy is going to be coming back into theaters. 1978's Dawn of the Dead, which I actually saw in the theater. They did like a re-release when I was in high school, and I saw it in the theater. But that's going to be there. Jim Henson's Labyrinth, people my age.
Oh, yes.
I saw it in the theater originally, but I get to go watch it again. Dumb and Dumber, that's going to be back into theaters. But the biggest re-release gimmick of the year is going to be May the 4th. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to do Star Wars Day, select theaters. They're going to run all the movies. But, you know, it kind of bothers me because I'm a Star Wars fan, and this is not what – no Rogue One.
Oh.
And they're going to do 9 without the Rogue One, and I would rather dump 1, 2, and 3. If I'm going to sit and watch them all, and I do that sometimes, I'll let them roll. But how I watch them is I watch Rogue One and then New Hope and then go the rest in, and I just skip 1, 2, and 3.
Well, of course, May 4th is Gregory's birthday. Mm-hmm. May the 4th be with him.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So it starts. You're one of the few people I know that likes both Star Trek and Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. I probably equally.
Because that's a kind of a battle between
yeah.
those two groups.
Yeah, people get mad at me.
Well, people get mad at you all the time, but this one's undeserved. You do both of these things.
Well, you know,
so
I found
well.
That out, you know, working for the Humane Society, too. It's like that with cat people and dog people, because a lot of times it's you know, cat people like dogs, too.
Right.
But a lot of dog people don't like cats. And I found the same thing with Star Wars and Star Trek. You know, Star Wars people like everything, but the Star Trek people don't like Star Wars. It's just the way it goes.
Just a reminder today, Warrington Redevelopment Plan meeting today. They're going to have a community town hall. It'll be at Lexington Terrace Community Center at 5:30. That's on Old Quarry Road. This is a part of 3 meetings. This one will give you an overview and making the case to update the Warrington Redevelopment Plan. Then they're going to have a meeting on the 16th. And then in May, they'll have a final draft for everybody to review. Go to myascamia.com and get those details.
Okay, more from the Pop-Tarts people, and I found out actually the person doing this, her name is Heidi Ray. She's the Senior Director of Marketing, and I'm wondering if all these ideas have been hers because they've been some pretty good ones. The latest thing from the Pop-Tarts is they're going to be doing mini Crunchy Bites. They're going to be called Crunchy Poppers, and they're going to be available in 2 flavors, including Frosted Strawberry Crunch and Frosted Brownie Crunch. They're just little poppers that you could pop in a bag.
Oh, God. When I was in Indianapolis, I went to a coffee shop, and they had homemade Pop-Tarts that looked so good, and I didn't do it. And now I regret it. I'll regret it for the rest of my life. All right, we're going to go ahead. We've done enough damage. Cena's off to the south of France. I'll be here tomorrow. Remember, we don't color on the dog.